Chevy Drive Chicago. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. We are brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers, Chevy Drive Chicago. Chief, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. A little bit better than our Hawks. Tough loss last night with the moms in town, but yeah, feeling good. Feeling pretty good.
So, yeah, they had the 3-0 lead in Minnesota and played one of their better games till the third period. Wild chipped away, and they end up losing in the shootout. It's the third time in the last four games that they've gone to the shootout. They've only won one of those games. But the scoring has been an issue. Going into last night's game, Chief, in seven of their last nine games, they had only scored two or less. And you're not going to win many hockey games doing that. Bedard with just one goal in the eight games since he returned prior to last night. And, as Bedard goes, the Blackhawks go.
Yeah, that is the thing. When the Hawks were, firmly in a wild card spot or at least a little bit closer early in the year and Bedard was on fire, top three in the league in scoring, well, he was dragging that team on his back. Since the injury and since he's come back, he hasn't been as prolific, and I wonder if he's, maybe laboring a little bit, maybe a little bit more cautious, and it's just one of those things where if he's not driving the bus, they don't have enough around him to really threaten people consistently night after night.
So, we talked to Jeff Blashill before last night's game and talked to him about the struggles of Jeff Blashill and Connor Bedard. And here's what Blashill had to say on Bedard's struggles before the Wild game.
Yeah, I think he'd be the first to tell you, since he's been back, I think there's been moments where he's going good and moments where he hasn't. And I think that's the ebb and flow of reality at times of the year. That's what happens with guys sometimes. And you're out a long time, man, and it's hard to get your mojo back sometimes and he's just working to get his mojo back, and we've kind of played with the lines. Maybe that's hurt him not having consistency there. Sometimes you're trying to help spark guys and you end up hurting them by making too many changes. But he can't fault the work ethic, you can't fault the care. It just hasn't gone the way that it had prior to him getting hurt.
Combination of reasons, Chief, that Bedard has struggled after missing that month of action. And remember, before the shoulder injury, he's 48% of the Blackhawks' offense, and he's a top four points leader in the National Hockey League. Comes back, and you're not going to hit the ground, and be playing exactly like you were before you were out for a month. And, he's had the different line mates, the flu went around, whatnot. He just has not been as good as he was. But before last night's game, Blashill decided to put Frank Nazar with Bedard and Teuvo Teravainen. And then, back in the Kane and Taves days, we used to call that the nuclear option when they would go when Q would decide to put 19 and 88 together. And we don't have a cute nickname for Nazar and Bedard, but they came out flying, Chief. They ended up with 14 of the Hawks' 32 shots on goal, and they really set the tone early in that game on the first two shifts.
Yeah, there was a couple of very beautiful plays. Bedard had that one sauce pass that landed right on Nazar's stick going in towards the net. Goaltender made a good save. So it's nice to see that the young kids are producing together. I think part of the equation here with the struggles, at least recently, look, you got Carolina. They're one of the top teams in their division. You got Tampa Bay, who's been on fire, so you lost that game. Two-time defending cup champions who are a little bit in desperation mode and getting healthier. You lose that one 5-1, and then you play the Minnesota Wild, who are a Stanley Cup contender as well. You lose 4-3. So I think while you don't want to go on these protracted losing streaks and you're frustrated with the struggles of Bedard and Nazar and obviously others, part of it is the other teams that have been playing are pretty good. So, and that has to, those guys get paid too. They're obviously at a different stratosphere in terms of what their goals are than the Blackhawks are right now. And I think, you know, I don't know about you, but when they're up 3-0, they were playing well, but that's not a team that you necessarily feel safe against on the road. Against, you know, a team that they made the big splash for Quinn Hughes, and they're probably not done adding. They're going to go for it for the Stanley Cup this year. So that's just one of those teams. Zuccarello, Hartman, you know, obviously Kirill, Jonas Brodin, Spurgeon, like they're a veteran-laden team with a ton of star power that they're going to find ways to win games, and they did last night, and I think that's just how it goes sometimes.
And you talked about the acquisition of Quinn Hughes. So he's brought over in mid-December. And honestly, the Hawks had him held in check for most of the game until that third period when, you know, he does what a top two defenseman in the league does, creates time and space and, you know, sets up the Eriksson Ek goal to make it 3-2. To me, it was – that's why you have star players, right? Because they can be – quiet for the first 40 minutes of a game, and then all of a sudden they take over. And that's what Quinn did on that particular shift. And, you know, back to the Bedard-Nazar situation, do you think it's a long-term fit? Because, you know, obviously both are centers, and Bedard is not taking faceoffs right now, and he won't take faceoffs before the Olympic break. So you got to put a centerman out there on wing with him, and Nazar fits that bill. Even Blashill said it's a little bizarre when you have all the responsibilities of a centerman, but you're not taking the faceoff. So it's a little bit of an adjustment for Connor Bedard. But do you think it's a long-term fit with those two?
I think it could be. You know, it's so much is contingent upon what they do with the guys that are coming in. So is Anton Frondell a center? Is he going to be, you know, kind of a... you know, Marian Hossa type with a big shot, protects the puck, can retrieve pucks and play on Connor Bedard's wing. What's Sasha Beauvais' future? He had a rare fight that we saw in college hockey for BU, but is he a top six center? You know, Ryan Green, where does he fit long term? Is he a center? I know he's played wing all year, but he was drafted to be kind of a middle or bottom six center. So I think it could certainly be. They seem like they had some mojo and some chemistry last night. I think the way that Bedard's speed is, it's hard to catch up to Frank Nazar, but they're playing at similar paces now. And it's just the idea of Nazar flying and creating that speed, that space for Bedard behind him, because that speed is such a weapon for Nazar. I think that there's something that could be there, especially if you get him another big body to play on that other wing. So I think it could be, but it feels like we've been rebuilding forever, and we have, but we're still in the fact finding portion of this rebuild where we don't know where a lot of these prospects that we're all excited about are going to slot in.
Well, good thing we have NHL insider Frank Saravalli. He's going to join us in our next segment, and he ranks the Hawks top 10 prospects. He'll run down how the Hawks pipeline looks. And there will be some surprises along the way as far as where he's got those guys ranked. And we'll talk about timeline with some of them, specifically Frondell. When you look at what Bedard managed to do, dude, he had 8 shots on goal last night and 2 blocked shots. I mean, so he had 10 shot attempts. He looked like he was going to score that first goal. And, you know, he also was set up by Nazar on the doorstep and slid it through Wallstedt. And somehow it didn't find the back of the net. Here is Jeff Blashill on his top line and how they looked last night.
I thought that it was a good line. It was a good line. You know, I thought Betsy and Frank, I haven't seen them play lots together. I thought they were really good together. I thought they showed a lot of skill. They kind of fed each other in good spots. They had a lot of chances, obviously scored with Turbo. So I thought that was a real dynamic line. I thought Dickey's line again was one of our best lines. So, you know, that's a good step in the right direction.
Hawks are now 6 points out of the final wild card spot. They're in that position, Chief, where a good week, they're going to climb to about 1 or 2 points back of the second wild card. A rough week, they're going to be 5 to 6 points out. I have a feeling they're going to be kind of in that range from now until, let's say, March?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting with the roster freeze coming up here in a week. Maybe that's another question for Frank, but it's like they're going to have to decide. Do they want to make a push and have meaningful games in March and the beginning of April? You know, or are they going to say, hey, like we were a year ahead of schedule, we knew this wasn't our year, and then look to move guys who have important roles on this team, whether it's Dickinson or Mikheyev or Connor Murphy, certainly these guys that are on expiring deals that could probably help somebody. So I don't know. It'll be an interesting deadline because, you know, you hate to tell the young group like, hey, great job. But we're mailing it in, even though we're, like you said, a good week away from being right there. And if you look at the teams ahead of them, like there's not a lot of teams that I'm like, oh, well, that's a scary team. Utah has been good. San Jose, you know, they're the Celebrini show. He's got a case for MVP. L.A. and Seattle are carbon copies of each other. Their defense and boring. Nashville stinks. So it's like it's not impossible that they could get healthy, get, you know, rest up over the Olympic break and come out ready to go when maybe some of these teams with their star players going to the Olympics are going to be having tired legs for a few weeks.
Yeah, and the other thing when you start looking at the standings and how the Hawks stack up, I mean, I don't have the analytics necessarily to support what I'm going to say here, but it seems like they play.
That's never stopped me.
it seems like they play the better teams much better and have more success. More of their wins have been against teams that are in the playoff mix, and they struggle against the LA Kings and some of the teams that are outside of the playoff picture. I mean, do you like? Because there's like days where I'm like, all right, they've got this, you know.
Yeah.
Florida played last night in Minnesota, got to their hotel at 4 a.m. They're finishing up a road trip. You got an opportunity to pounce on these guys. It's not like they were lighting things up and yeah. You go out and you just kind of sleepwalk through a performance.
Yeah. I think teams like LA and Seattle specifically, because they are so boring and so defensive minded that their structure is so tight that it might be tough for a young team like the Hawks, and they might get frustrated. And it's like you turn the puck over here or there and you're losing a game 2-1 before you know it. But yeah, like when they dropped that game to Calgary a couple weeks ago, it's like, man, like that's a game that if you're going to make the playoffs, you have to beat Calgary at home.
Right.
And they lost 3-1 that night. So, you know, you lose to Boston, whatever, you lose to Connor McDavid, you know, that's going to happen. Like I ran down the last three games they've had, Minnesota, Florida. It's a good point that you made about the Florida team. I just think of that as like, hey, like they're the cup champs for a reason. Yeah. They know they got to start stacking up points. So maybe it's just like, hey, boys, like circle the wagons. We need 2 points here, and they got it done. And Tampa. So it's like it's almost like they could use they need the Olympic break. I think it's coming at the right time for this group. And then, you know, this next stretch is very important, and it's an opportunity to climb in the standings between now in the Olympic break, where you go at Pittsburgh, who's, you know, touch and go, Columbus, who's at the bottom of the East, San Jose, who you're competing against, Columbus again. That's a 4-game skid where it's like if you put up 6 points there, all of a sudden you're looking pretty good.
Yeah, so we'll discuss that. But up next, NHL insider Frank Saravalli joins us, and he'll have his list of the top 10 Blackhawks prospects. We'll go through that pipeline and hopefully set the tone for this rebuild as it continues in year 4 now of Kyle Davidson and company. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Rolling on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. We're brought to you by Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy Dealers. Chevy drives Chicago with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. It is our pleasure to bring in NHL insider Frank Saravalli. He's the co-host of Frankly Hockey with John Buchagras on Victory Plus TV. Also can see him on CHSN's Blackhawks pregame show, Countdown Live. Frank, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing all right. We're kind of breaking down the Bedard situation and, you know, how he has performed since coming back from the shoulder injury, paired last night with Nazar. I know it's only one game, but they seem to put on a show. I mean, he ends up with 8 shots on goal. That line produced 14 shots on goal. Do you think Bedard, Nazar, Tavo could be a long-term fit?
Long-term meaning, like, beyond this season, yes. I worry in the short term, particularly with likely Jason Dickinson moving on, the rest of the lineup kind of gets thin in a hurry, and it's not the same thing as, you know, when the Oilers stick McDavid and Draisaitl together, but the similar type conversation and comparison, which is, are you better off balancing your lineup a little bit more? So I see it both ways. You know me, I like to put a stake in the ground and sort of pick one as opposed to being stuck in the middle. But I can see why it's appealing for the Hawks. Connor Bedard needs a running mate. But at the same time, I think for the long term and strength of this team and the build, probably better off if they're separate.
Yeah, and I think that part of the equation here is, what is Anton Frondell and what is his real timeline for the NHL? So when you look at him, you just had him projected as the Blackhawks' number one prospect. Do you look at him as more of a center or a guy who is going to be a running mate for Bedard?
I look at him probably being a running mate. It's still really hard to say. Like, I think one of the biggest questions facing the Hawks, and it's not like an existential problem, it's who are the centers in this group? I'm pretty confident that Ryan Green is a center. I'm a lot more confident this year that Connor Bedard is a center. I'm not 100% sure yet on Frondell, and I'm not 100% sure on Nazar. So that leaves you some flexibility. Likely, or in a perfect world, I think you would want Green probably playing more of a 3C role if you're thinking like how this whole, you know, puzzle gets put together. And then you have Frondell that's capable of doing a lot of the dirty work that makes Connor Bedard go. And, you know, he's the guy that's comfortable playing on the wall, winning battles, doing a lot of the things that I explained with Pat on CHSN, the championship style qualities. That's what Anton Frondell brings. Now, just depends on exactly where he's lining up and how he's playing.
All right, so let's get to this exercise from last night. You gave us your top 10 Blackhawks prospects in the system. Let's look at the bottom five, 6 through 10. And that's at number 6, you've got Kevin Korchinski. At number 7, Nick Lardis, who was just sent to Rockford. At number 8, you have Merrick Van Acker. 9, A.J. Spellacy. And 10, the QB, now forward, Mason West. Let's start there. If you had to place a wager on a player you're most confident will play in the NHL out of that group, who would it be?
Well, I think they'll all play. The question is who will have the longest run and who will find the most success at the NHL level. And in an odd way, I think that that's going to be AJ Spellacy. And the reason for that is so many of these guys that play high level major junior, they put up gaudy big numbers and they get to the NHL and it's like, well, if they're not playing a top 6 role, how do they find a way to contribute to the team? And I think that's part of what Nick Lardis is beginning to face in his career. 71 goals last year, a magical season, and now is trying to figure out how to transition to the pro game where that's just not going to happen. And the same is probably true for Merrick Van Acker and also Jack Pridham playing in the OHL. They're neck and neck in goals this season. So those guys are going to have to work through that. And Spellacy kind of has that already figured out. Like, he doesn't need to be the big offensive producer and scorer. he's an energy guy. He's a bottom six forward, and you need those guys. Like, those are really critical pieces. Think, and the comparison that I keep having for Hawks fans when it comes to Spellacy is, think about the role that Andrew Shaw played on those winning Hawks teams, and like, you realize how much you need guys like that. It can't just be high-end skilled players. And so I think there's a definite role and fit for him. And I think some of these other guys are a little bit of wild cards in the sense, like, Mason West is like the ultimate wild card. Like, he may not be even an NHL player, but the upside is real, and the rest of it, these guys are going to have to figure it out.
You have Kevin Korchinski at number six. Where is the organization at on Korchinski right now? And do you expect him to be full-time with the Blackhawks next season?
I really don't. And I get the sense that it's not that the Hawks are down on him. It's just that he hasn't really developed and made progress in a way that I think gets everyone really excited. Like, he's obviously a really talented skater, moves well. He's got some size. I mean, playing his first full season in the NHL, I think a lot of people were expecting or thinking at number seven overall that this guy is going to be, or hoping to be, a franchise changer. And I don't think that's in the cards. And I think looking at what's in front of him on the Hawks back end, he's a similar style player to some of the other pieces that they already have, and doesn't do any of those things nearly as well. So I wonder if, and it's not in the short term, but just thinking long term, is Kevin Korchinski's best opportunity going to come away from Chicago?
Interesting. We've got NHL insider Frank Saravalli on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Hey, let's move to your top five and break them down five through one. You have Vaclav Nestrosil, Sasha Boisvert, Roman Kantsarov, Sam Rinzell at number two, and at number one, Anton Frondell. Sam Rinzell has been, you know, basically out of sight for Blackhawks fans unless they've been locked in on Rockford this year. But your ranking of Rinzell at number two signals that, you know, he's got a lot of potential here. And he's one of those guys that you took third in a first round, and he may end up unseating the guy you took first in the first round, which was Korchinski.
I think that's already happened.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a supremely talented player. He's still got a lot to figure out. The raw ability and upside is enormous. And I think the way this year started, it probably rattled him in a bit of a way that's a good way. Like, hey, guess what? Not everything's going to come easy. There are going to be hiccups. You're going to have to adjust. You're going to have to find your confidence again. And that, plus getting up to the speed of the game and how quickly it moves, I think that is one of, even though he moves exceptionally well, getting his brain working as quickly as the NHL level is probably the challenge right now, to cut down on some mistakes that we saw. So I'm a huge believer in Sam Rinzell. I think he can still be a franchise-changing defenseman or franchise-impact-level defenseman, which, when you start to think about the big club and Levshinov and the impact he's had, Vlasic and the role that he plays, like, if you can make this a three-headed monster with Sam Rinzell in there, that's going to be the makings of a pretty special defense corps.
Now, assuming the Blackhawks don't make some kind of playoff push here, some miracle run, they're going to be picking in the top, we'll call it seven. Do you think that this lack of centers will, that like clear-cut centers will drive their decision-making, or is it still best player available at that point?
I think that's something that they've been wrestling with over the last few weeks as they held their amateur scouting meetings. They haven't set a direction or a course of action yet, and so much of it will depend on how the ping pong balls shape up and where they land. Because I think the players for this 2026 NHL draft will be broken down into tiers. And once you get outside of maybe the top four, it does start to get a little bit interesting. So again, it will depend, but I think there's a push and pull. You would think based on what we just talked about with Renzel, Levshinov, Vlasic, you know, the bevy of other sort of bottom three defensemen that they have, or bottom pair guys, any one of them, like Louis Crevier in the season he's had has been really exciting, that they would lean away from defense and say, well, we've got Spencer Knight covered for the foreseeable future. We've got our defensemen. Let's focus on particularly drafting centers. And I don't think they've necessarily gotten to that point. Sometimes when you do draft on positional need, it really puts you in a tough spot where, you know, you end up making selections and deviating off of pure upside. And that part, I mean, look, they're waiting to see how this plays out. But let's just do the math to answer your question, Chief, about the center position. So let's assume that Nestrazil, West, Vaneker, Lardis are all true wingers. Out of the group that is Bedard, Nazar, Moore, Green, Frondell, and Kantsarov, you really only need three of those guys to be pure centers. So if you think about it through that prism, I mean, I would probably still lean toward best player available, and that's just my opinion.
Well, and, you know, you mentioned Oliver Moore. Part of the reshuffling of the lines was to get Moore back to center. They think he's best there, and quite frankly, he's played his best this season when he played center. You've said on CHSN that you think Anton Frondell, when the Swedish league season is over, that he will come to North America, and you expect him to be almost like a trade deadline acquisition along with a Sam Renzel call-up. Is that the way you see it?
I also think you're going to see Roman Kantarov if they can make the dates line up. I mean, that's the real, like, I know as the Hawks are kind of in that nibbling range or within the circle of a playoff spot, that fans are like, well, why don't we just trade for a piece and, you know, do a little importing and exporting, move out some of the pending UFAs, and then add something to ensure we or get closer to a playoff spot. But they're really cognizant of keeping their lanes open for these guys to come over. Frondell is a sure thing, a sure bet, because he's already under contract. Renzel is a likely call up in the last chunk of the season to see how much he's grown and to give him some positive feel heading into a big summer. And then Kantsarov, you know, part of it will depend on his Russian team releasing him from the last, you know, few weeks of non-hockey in his contract, which is typically a formality, but not a guarantee. And if that's the case, like, depending on when his KHL season ends, you could see all three of those guys in the lineup at the same time, which is pretty thrilling.
Let's go around the NHL just a little bit here before we spring you. I saw a tweet that you had about an hour ago. Artemi Panarin, the former Hawks, not going to play for the Rangers before the Olympic break. Which teams do you expect to make a play for Panarin?
I think there's a small handful. And I think the list is, I mean, it's changing. It's evolving. Like, look at a team like the LA Kings, for instance. They're not really sure that they're in the mix. And I think they have interest in a player like Panarin, but really would like to see an extension materialize. And the Washington Capitals have interest in Panarin. They'd like to add him to their group, to help maybe get them over the playoff hump this year, and what about moving forward? And then, you know, what about Minnesota if you played him opposite of Kirill Kaprizov? Like, there's lots of interesting possibilities, and part of what is holding this up is the control factor from Panarin, that he can decide, even if he wants to get traded. But I viewed today's development as a shot across the bow to the Panarin camp saying, look, time to come to the table and help us get something done because you're not playing. You're too valuable of an asset. And if you think that we're just going to skate through and, you know, make a deal at your leisure, like it's you that is now on the clock.
You think the Blackhawks will end up being a salary cap bank again this deadline where they just are the third team involved and get something back just to eat some cap and maybe help with Panarin get to Minnesota?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Chief, because it's a great reminder to everyone that that rule changed and you can no longer do the third party transaction. Players must have been on your roster for 75 days. So that deadline to be the third team transacting was actually back at the holiday roster freeze right before Christmas. And so now it's different than years past. You can only have the trading team retain him 50%, and that's it. That's the max now.
Frank, great stuff as always. Again, co-host with John Butchergrass on Victory Plus TV. It is Frankly Hockey. It is must-watch for hockey content in the National Hockey League. And, of course, I'll see you on CHSN's Blackhawks pregame show tomorrow.
Yeah, sounds good. Good to be with you guys. Have a good night.
That's Frank Saravalli joining us on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Up next, one of the greatest traditions in the NHL. And why aren't other leagues around the globe adopting what the NHL does? That's next. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. On the AM. At 1000. On the FM. At 100.3 HD2. On your phone. Through the ESPN Chicago app.
Oh! Rolling on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Chevy Drive Chicago. Drive with Barstool Chief Drives. Drive a Chevy. With Ryan Brandel, I am Pat Boyle. You know, Chief, the sport that we love has some great traditions, right? You get, when you win the championship and the Stanley Cup, you get a day with the cup. The handshake line after a playoff series, after you've just been beating the snot out of one another and you line up. I mean, that's theater in itself. Like,
yeah, that's great. I love how they give... They present the cup to the captain instead of the owner, like the other
sports. That's great. I love that as well. I'm actually surprised in this day and age of copycat leagues why another sport has not adopted the day with their championship trophy. Now, I know the World Series trophy would have to be tweaked. I don't think it'd be able to carry around with all those pennants and things that it has on it. But like the Lombardi Trophy, for example, like wouldn't you imagine of just like all the great shots you would see where Tom Brady would have taken that Lombardi Trophy in his off season? And it gives you content, you know, when the season is dark, so to speak. I'm surprised that nobody has jumped on that.
I don't think the other trophies have as much cachet as the cup.
Because
there's only one, right? So that is the cup. I know they replaced the rings or whatever, but everybody shares it that wins it, and your name's on there forever. Like if you walk into the Patriots, it's six, soon to be possibly seven different Lombardi trophies. So I feel like that might be part of it, but you're right. The NFL finds a way to dominate every single month, and if they had a month of March...
Yeah,
where you know there, it's all kind of the dead pre-draft, like whatever, and you'll be dominating on social media if you have Sam Darnold doing. I don't know if you knew this, but his grandfather was a Marlboro man. Can you imagine if he was recreating the old Marlboro man shots with the Super Bowl trophy if they won it? That'd be something. So yeah, I'm surprised the NFL hasn't done that.
All right, so there's another tradition the NHL has taken part in now. I would say about 20 years. And the Hawks are taking part in it right now. It's the mom's trip where players invite their mom, their aunt, you know, their billet mom or another mentor in their life. It goes every other year. It's usually father's 1 year, mom's the next, I saw Boston last week do the sisters trip. Different variety, but all 32 teams take part in this. And you get to spend, in this case for the Blackhawks moms, 4 days on the road experiencing the NHL life. They had a dinner Monday night in Minneapolis. Players get a chance to, you know, thank their mom or their dad or their hockey mentor for all they did during their hockey journey. And players get to know their teammates better because all of a sudden they're connecting at a more personal, a family level, understanding why said player is the way they are. Because, oh, okay, I met him. His dad's a jokester. It all makes sense. Yeah. I can't believe again, you couldn't do this in the NFL because it's too businesslike. It's, you know, you're flying in on a Saturday. You got meetings. You got a little downtime for dinner. You got a meeting at night, and then you play the game the next morning. NFL, this would not go for. But for Major League Baseball or the NBA, I'm surprised those two leagues haven't adopted these parents' weekends to break up the monotony of an 82-game NBA schedule or a 162 MLB schedule.
Yeah, I agree. Imagine doing a series down in Florida or L.A. when you're somewhere warm. I would think I would be mad if I was a Blackhawks mom and I said my cities are going to be Minnesota and Pittsburgh in the dead of winter when they've got, you know, right after the Olympic break, they could have done Nashville and Colorado. That would have been a much nicer trip for the moms. But what are you going to do? But, yeah, it is nice, and I'm sure it is important to get to know. You look at people differently when you meet their families.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that is it's a valuable thing for the parents and the children that are on the team, but it's also valuable as a general team building thing too. So it would be easiest, you would think, for baseball, but maybe they just have enough of that built in. I feel like the families travel because the kids are off in school. Like, you know, famously the White Sox maybe 15 years ago had the controversy about kids in the clubhouse and stuff like that. So maybe that's part of it where it's just like the families are just around more. I'm not sure. But it is nice that hockey does that.
All right, up next, the voice of the Chicago Blackhawks on television, Rick Ball. He will join us from Pittsburgh and the mom's trip. That's next. This is The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
Call us or tweet your comments to at ESPN 1000. The Hockey Show.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Now Previer with a shot. Puck loose. They score. It's jammed in at the side of the goal. And it may have been Teravainen. There was a scramble. Possibly Bedard, too. They were both there. Either way, first minute, 20 seconds. Panger, it's 1-0 Hawks.
Classic. He'll feed it ahead. Here comes Mikheyev down the wing with a shot. He scores! Mikheyev goes far corner and in and makes it 3-0 Hawks.
That is the Emmy Award-winning Rick Ball on the call last night on CHSN. Hawks built a 3-0 lead, ended up falling to the Minnesota Wild in the shootout. And right now, Rick Ball joins us live on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. How you doing tonight, Rick?
I am terrific. How are you guys?
We're great.
Beautiful.
Let's start with the mom's trip. We were just discussing it a little bit. We're surprised that some other leagues like MLB and NBA haven't adopted the mentor slash fathers slash mothers trips. What you've been on all sorts of these types of trips. What kind of bonding experience is it like?
It is a fantastic tradition. You're right. I am surprised other sports haven't picked up on it like hockey has. Every team does it. With varying different groups, moms, dads, mentors, switches year to year. I love these trips. I mean, the moms are having a blast. The Chardonnay is flowing. And that's just in the broadcast booth. But it's, you know, really is a great chance to kind of go back to your roots as a hockey player, right? Most of these guys grow up, the parents, you know, how hockey is. It's a sport where you're going at 5 o'clock in the morning because ice time is so scarce and mom and dad are driving you to the arena and play such a big role in the development of you as an athlete and the chance to give back a little bit, bring them on the road and see how all that hard work has paid off for the guys who've made it to the various pinnacle of the sport. It's really nice. And it's also a chance for the parents to get to know each other more, right? I mean, they do just naturally, but a real opportunity to bond as a group, as parents and siblings and aunts and uncles, I think it's a real, it's a terrific tradition that that I never grow old of. It's always fun to meet them too as a broadcaster and get to know the families a little bit, you know, in connection with the various players. And you know, there are guys that that I've covered over the years in various cities, and I still keep in touch or bump into their parents every now and then. And it's just nice to you know, to have that family feel around the team and the organization. It's a pretty cool experience.
What is the mood around the team these days? You know, they're 6 points out of the playoffs. They're kind of sputtering a little bit here, a little three-game skid. Is the mood like, hey, let's get back into this playoff hunt? Or is it guys just trying to get to the Olympic break?
I hate to dive too deeply into the big bag of cliches, but I think it's just let's win tomorrow and then let's win on Friday. I don't think you can put too much of a bigger picture on it. I know the organization does. It's, you know, the reality is the Hawks, even if they get in the playoffs, be a long shot to win the Stanley Cup this season. It really is about the future. And every step of the way is a learning experience when you've got a young team. Last night was a learning experience. They had a 3-0 lead. They were the better team last night in every metric. And yet they wind up losing in a shootout and watch a 3-0 lead slip away. One of the things that you have to learn as a young team is how to steer those games home. You know, they're trying to figure that out. They played a really good game. If they play like that tomorrow night against Pittsburgh, they've got a great chance to win. Yeah. And as Jeff Blashill said after the game, we play that game 98% of the time. We win that game if we play that way. So, but learning to win is part of the process. So, you know, your question was, you know, what's the focus? Getting into the playoffs. That's still not an outrageous goal because the Western Conference, in terms of the two wild card spots, still pretty wide open. They're, what are they, 6 points out?
Yeah.
Right now, I mean, they have some teams they have to jump over, but that's doable if you can get on a nice roll. The more important thing is just playing the right way, and if you can bring that to the table, most nights you're going to win more often than you lose, and it's all about systems and repeatable habits and playing as Jeff Blashill always says, more winning hockey than losing hockey. And I thought they played more winning hockey last night, but whether or not they make the playoffs this season remains to be seen. I think we've seen this team take a major step forward. A lot of the young guys that were talked about over the last number of years are now in the NHL. Fans are getting a taste of all these prospects who've been in the pipeline. There are still many more coming. So, you know, it's definitely all part of a plan. This isn't just an accident. It's sort of, you know, a plan that's still in progress. And I think just learning how to play the right way, win games when you've got them under control like last night, and all that other stuff is the focus for this team right now.
I know it's a small sample size, but did the Hawks find something with Bedard and Nazar last night? Because with Tavo, the trio ended up with 14 shots on goal.
I thought they were awesome, Pat. Like, I felt that was the best game Bedard's played since he's been back from his injury. He got the one assist, almost had a goal. That would have been a huge one. I think it would have made it 4-0, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. It might have sealed the game. But yeah, I thought he was terrific last night. So those guys seem to have some chemistry. You know, last season when Nazar and Bedard played together, it didn't seem to work for whatever reason. But I love what I saw out of that group last night. And Connor seemed to have that pop that he had going before the injury. It seemed to take him a few games to regain his form. And I felt like last night was the first time since he's come back that we saw him look like he did before he went down with the shoulder problem. So hopefully that is a sign of things to come. And I would, you know, I'd be shocked if we don't see those three guys at least start the game together tomorrow night, because they had a lot of chemistry going for sure.
Did the Hawks find something with the Crevier-Kaiser situation? Like, between those two young defensemen, who has surprised you more this season, Crevier or Wyatt Kaiser?
That might be a coin toss. I mean, I like Wyatt Kaiser last year. I don't know that I saw him taking this kind of a step forward. Crevier has always been a project. He always had the 6'8", 242 pounds going for him. But he's taken a huge stride, too, this year. And the fact that he's paired up with Vlasic as the guy they throw out against the top lines every night, that is the biggest surprise. Although Kaiser's a great story. Like, I don't know if he's underappreciated by the fans or not. The way he's playing, they really have something there. You know, and the fact that I'm happy that he got that deal done right before camp and didn't miss any, because I think it would have hurt him a little bit. It usually does when players miss training camp or a portion of it. Was able to get in for a full camp and the full preseason. But I'm a big Wyatt Kaiser fan. They've both been great stories. I guess if you made me pick one, I'd probably say Crevier, because he was always a long shot. I know Panger was talking about this on the air when we saw Patrick Waugh roll through the United Center a while back, and Patrick coached Crevier in junior hockey, and he said he wasn't even a project in junior hockey. He was such a long shot, but it was this big, tall kid, you know, all the physical attributes, and they just let him play, and the Hawks have kind of done the same thing, and, you know, he's very athletic. Like, he's a huge guy and quite coordinated for somebody who's that big, and, you know, he's got a great work ethic and a long reach, and it's been such a weapon on the penalty kill especially. It's a big part of the reason why it's the best PK in the entire league. I'm a big Louis Crevier fan, and what he's done this year has been a huge step forward.
Hey, Rick, what time is curfew for Darren Pang tonight?
I don't know if there is one exactly. Pang just operates on his own sort of time clock, you know? So when you think he's going to be sleeping, he's awake. When you think he might be awake, he's sleeping. We just never know.
Well, your chemistry with him has been fantastic on CHSN. We look forward to your call tomorrow night in Pittsburgh. Thank you for doing this, Rick.
Hey, boys, great talking to you, and I'm looking forward to it, too. It should be a fun game tomorrow night. The Penguins are rolling.
Yeah.
They're a bit of a surprise this year, so that should be a fun game.
Probably one of the biggest surprises. Rick, thank you very much. Thanks to our guests, Rick Ball and Frank Saravalli, and our producer, Mario Herron. When you think of surprise teams, I'd have to say Pittsburgh is up there. I did not think they would be right in the thick of a playoff berth.
No, I know. And it felt like they were done and buried. And then they got off to a great start, and then it felt like they came back to earth. And you thought that they're just kind of fade away, and they haven't. Like, they're going to be there. Crosby and Malkin, one last trip around the sun for those two. So it's kind of, I'm enjoying it. It's great to see, and you'd hate to see them go out with a whimper, so, or a trade. So if they're in the playoffs, those guys aren't moving. It'll be nice to see Pittsburgh in the playoffs.
How about this week? Chris Letang, Evgeny Malkin, and Sidney Crosby play their 1,000th game together.
That's absurd.
It's nuts.
Absurd.
Hey, that's going to do it for the hockey show. Chief, thanks for jumping on, and we'll see you next Wednesday.
I'll be there. Bells on.
That's going to do it for the hockey show, presented by Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy Dealers, Chevy Drive, Chicago. We'll see you next Wednesday on ESPN 1000.